Hi, friends. The book is called Manufactured Crisis from investigative journalist and author James Simpson. We're going to talk a lot about DEI, the Cloward-Piven strategy, and a whole lot more next.
Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
Thanks so much for tuning in, listening, watching, sharing the podcast. Let's bring in James Simpson, the website crisisnow.net. That's crisisnow.net. So, Jim, this is part two. Welcome, brother. Good to see you.
Great to see you, David.
So I want to remind people, we did a podcast with you last month, and we started off by talking about your book, very important book, Manufactured Crisis, and we just could not possibly, I mean, it's almost 400 pages, not quite, yeah. But almost, we just basically scratched the surface. So it's such an important idea, it's not just an idea, it's what the left has been implementing in America, and we needed to give it another, at least another podcast. So let's talk about what you put right on the homepage of your website before we dive into your book. You talked about the Cloward-Piven strategy, which we touched on in the previous podcast. And it says, the destructive Cloward-Piven strategy explains how the Biden-Harris administration was employing it before our very eyes in order to collapse America from within. So that's key. We've got enemies within America. This is not, these are not foreign entities in most cases, but our own administration. Talk to us a little bit about that, because those are hard words for someone to hear who doesn't really understand their ideology.
It's absolutely true. It's absolutely correct. You know, used to drive me nuts when I would hear some commentator like Sean Hannity say, oh, what a stupid idea that is. And no, the ideas weren't stupid. The ideas were deliberately destructive, mm-hmm. deliberately destructive. And that's because, well, today's Democrat Party has become a wholly owned subsidiary of the American Communist Party, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the international communist movement led by China and Russia. And that's just the reality. And the Cloward-Piven strategy, you know, Richard Cloward and Francis Fox Piven were sociology professors at the Columbia University. And they were both radical leftists. Piven even joined the students when they took over the administration building in a 60s protest. These were radical leftist professors. And they came up with this idea that if you overwhelm the system with problems, that you could collapse the system and in the ashes impose communism. And they didn't put it exactly in those words. In their article, they said the idea is to pack the welfare rolls with every recipient to receive every single benefit that he or she possibly could, and the government would be unable to afford it all, and so the government would collapse, and then they could pose their solution, which would be a guaranteed annual income for all Americans, which in today's dollars would be between $40,000 and $80,000 per family of four. Now, if you think about it, even with the great expansion of the welfare that occurred in the 1960s with President Johnson's Great Society Program, which, by the way, was the brainchild of Richard Cloward. Most people don't know that. But I describe it in my book. Even with that huge expansion of welfare, the using a national income, a guaranteed annual income, would be vastly more expensive. So You have to ask, how could you use a strategy to collapse the system and then impose a new strategy that would make things even worse? But that, in fact, is the true goal, because the true goal of all these Marxists is to destroy capitalism, mm-hmm. is to see our country totally destroyed. And that's what it's about. Now, Johnson was all for it because he said in his kindly words that we'll have them and words voting for us for the next 200 years. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the Democrats have that kind of totally self-serving political calculus in mind. But the thinkers behind it were all about destroying our society as we know it.
Yeah. Crush the system, overwhelm the system. And by the way, that relates also to immigration. And you've got a chapter called Surge the Border. We talked a little bit about that last time, but let's go back to a quote and the idea that you just said. I mean, I just read that in your book last night from Lyndon Johnson, The Great Society, and he was a racist. He had anti-communist groups and nonprofits coming out against him when he was campaigning, and that's where the Johnson Amendment came from, by the way, something to try to shut them up and silence his mm-hmm. political enemies. But talk about the fact, because a lot of people are trying to hear what you're saying, James Simpson, and they're thinking, well, they really want communism in America, even though it's failed and even though it's such a vicious and brutal system. Can you explain for the average person that maybe doesn't know world history and doesn't understand this is an ideology and it's not? I love also what you said, Hannity and others. Their policies aren't stupid. They are systematically scheming this, doing this to on purpose. So share a little bit more about that, especially when it comes to welfare and blacks voting for Democrats.
Yeah, well, you know, Johnson's program moved the remaining blacks who had historically, actually before FDR, voted Republican, because of course Abraham Lincoln was a Republican, but starting with FDR and the development that he brought, he centralized welfare. You know, people think, well, if we give up federal welfare, there won't be any welfare. Well, that's not true. There was always welfare. It was administered by the states and especially by churches and charities. And so the government under FDR centralized that under their control and really undermined churches as a big part of that. Mm. And then when Johnson greatly expanded welfare, those blacks who were still Republican pretty much all moved over into the Democrat Party. But the scheme behind it was not, well, was to, the practical purpose was to get a lot more Democrat voters. And Cloward and Piven admitted that publicly themselves in the article they wrote about the crisis strategy, which anybody can read in the May 1966 issue of Nation magazine. If you don't believe what I'm saying, they said at the time, we are trying to create a crisis. And it could be an institutional crisis. It could be a spontaneous street revolt. It could be anything. And we have seen it all many times since then. But their whole agenda was not only to make blacks dependent on welfare, but it was also to prevent inner cities from really having the kind of resources they needed to provide good schools, provide good roads, provide good infrastructure, provide good police departments and fire to inner cities to make these people feel even more ostracized in American society and even more feel like this was a racist society and, you know, incurably racist. But the Democrats were the hard left, I would say, among the Democrats, were agitating for that since the 1920s. Since the
Wow.
1920s,
Wow.
And it was under the guidance of the Soviet Union, because once it was founded, the Soviet Union quickly took control of all the communist parties of the world under what was known as the Communist International or the Comintern, and so every Communist Party in every part of the world was getting their orders directly from the Soviet Union. So the Communist Party USA was really not a legitimate, in any sense of the word, opposition party in this country. It was a foreign entity controlled, subversive group dedicated to the destruction of our society. And they targeted blacks right from the beginning, right from the beginning. And this includes not only the NAACP, but the ACLU. And the NAACP, the one black person, all of the founders of the NAACP were white leftists, except for W.E.B. Du Bois. And, you know, he has his own stamp. You know, he's more famous than Booker T. Washington, who really did do a lot to help blacks get out of right after slavery, get into integrate themselves into society and become productive members of society. Du Bois, on the other hand, was he just wanted to blame the society as it was and tear it down. And he ultimately joined the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you mentioned him, because we've got a couple minutes before we're going to take a quick break. But I remember reading about him when I was doing some research for a chapter on the buried history of the dark history of Planned Parenthood. And his name came up, W.E.B. Du Bois and the NAACP. He was apparently, this guy's just, he was evil. He was working with the black community to sell really population control. And this is a whole nother issue. But I mean, this guy, his evil roots go deep in so many different levels. But anything you want to wrap us up? And when it comes to Du Bois, James, and share a couple things that people probably have no idea, because they just hear, well, he did such a great thing and started the NAACP.
Yeah.
And look at
yeah.
it now.
Yeah. And you know, there are a number of former black communists who have come forward to say just how bad things were and just how subversive those organizations were, and that they served the purposes of the Soviet Union. They served the Soviet foreign policy, which was to divide our country into warring fragments. And, you know, when you talk about Margaret Sanger, that's included in a chapter that's called Minimum Wage Eugenics. And a lot of the liberals at the time were opposed to the minimum wage because they felt that there were groups of people who were unworthy of earning money and taking the job from normal people. And guess who those unworthy people were? In Margaret Sanger's own words, they were the blacks. But they were also anybody who was disabled in any way. And it's incredible. Mm-hmm. They were opposed initially to the minimum wage because they thought it was going to provide a better income for blacks and disabled people and other undesirables. They later got in behind it because it was a benefit to unions, but then again, unions also were very bigoted in the way they chose their membership.
Okay, friends, we've got to take a brief pause. The book, it's phenomenal, Manufactured Crisis, available on Amazon and also at James' website, crisisnow.net. When we come back, we're going to talk about that surge that we're hearing so much about at the border, and also DEI and the weaponization of culture, that and more up next.
Introducing Patriot Mobile, the wireless carrier that stands with you. We are committed to supporting the values that make our nation great. With affordable plans and reliable nationwide coverage, Patriot Mobile is not just a wireless service. It's a call to action for those who believe in the American dream.
Get free activation now with promo code David. Hey, friends, thanks to you, and of course, praise God, our episodes recently have been surging, and we've been averaging 250,000 views, listens, and downloads per podcast, I've been told. That's across our various platforms, and they're implementing a new strategy to get it out there behind the scenes. I'm not doing it, but it's getting out there, and you're helping as well. So praise God. Thank you for your prayers, your donations, and of course, for sharing the podcast. Back to James Simpson, Manufactured Crisis. Let's jump right into DEI. James, President Trump signed an executive order trying to get rid of this. This is so deeply rooted in all of our institutions, especially in academia, corporations. Some of them maybe are reversing, but it has been entrenched. So let's talk about how important this is. And at least he's raising awareness, although one executive order is not going to get rid of it. Go ahead.
No, so, you know, and a lot of that really ramped up. I don't think it was initiated, but it ramped up under President Obama.
Yeah.
When they decided that institutional racism was defined by any organization that did not have a population of employees that exactly reflected that population's proportion in society. So in other words, every engineering school, because blacks represent 13% of society, had to have 13% blacks or women or gays or whatever group you choose. And that was a very, very dangerous precedent in really in the development and institutionalization of DEI. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, you know, that DEI has nothing to do really with equity. I mean, if you think about how well Asians do, you know, yeah, in math and in engineering and in things like that, and yet their population isn't equally, you know, represented relative what their total population is in the country. And their grades, they're graded on a different curve. I mean, it really is designed to put people in place based on this DEI notion rather than on their abilities and competence. And we've seen the consequences of that in many situations, most recently, I believe, with that crash that occurred at Washington National Airport, mm-hmm, where the helicopter, the Black Hawk helicopter, flown by a woman who was an outspoken person on behalf of the Biden administration, flying right into this other plane. Mm. But there are so many other examples. Mm-hmm. I remember I went to this health facility once, my wife and I did, when I was married back in the early aughts. And this was, you know, one of these health farms where you spend a week or two and you're supposed to get all well. Well, there was this young black girl She was under 30. She was about 28, if I remember correctly, but certainly no older than that. And she had been the vice president in one department of American Express. She had been the vice president of a major component of American Express. Now, how many employees does American Express have? 100,000, 50,000? I don't know. But she had quit because she was so discouraged, because she knew she was so deeply over in over her head
Wow.
that she couldn't take it.
Hmm.
And she was so discouraged about life because this was obviously a DEI hire. What could be better than to put a young black woman in this very, very important, very high-paying position for no other reason that she can check a few boxes. And so, that was one very up close and personal example, but we see it in everything. And
Yes.
it mischaracterizes society, and it is not of any benefit to the people who get jobs based on those concepts, because in many cases they're not ready for it, they're not competent for it. In engineering, they can't get 13% of the school's population to be black because 13% of the black population doesn't happen to want to be engineers. It's amazing. And so they have to twist and turn to make all these things work, and then it creates serious problems throughout our society.
Yes, it does. It can create a crisis. I mean, I think about the medical community. I don't care. I want the best qualified doctor or nurse to take care of me. And if it's a fire at the house, you want the best, most strongest, most capable firefighter. I don't, well, probably is not going to be a young woman, but so let's move on, James. I've got to really want to get to this chapter on Surge the Border before we run out of time. And you wrote about this in 2019 in a book called The Red Green Axis, and it described the problems with immigration, refugee resettlement, and these migrant caravans were already surging at the border. And there was a warning from 2015 over in Africa and the Middle East, and that has now reshaped Western Europe and has skyrocketed Islamic terrorism. We're seeing rapes, we're seeing gangs, we're seeing drugs, all kinds of stuff. And we can't be so naive that that wouldn't happen to America. But the open borders were to manufacture this crisis, to overwhelm the system. It has been by design here in America. Go ahead, 4 minutes, James, your thoughts.
So absolutely, it has been by design. And of course, like everything else, its proponents calculate the different ways that can be of value to them. Of course, the practical way for Democrats is that if they can get these people in, they can either amnesty them or figure out a way to allow them to vote illegally, which they already are doing. And if they get enough people to do that, they could win elections permanently into the future, and we would no longer have a pluralist political system. We would be ruled by tyrants. So that's one element of it. And the other element is to flood our society with overwhelming problems. And to me, even though Clarendon Piven didn't articulate it as a way to promote their crisis strategy, it has become the greatest crisis strategy of all, because we are letting in terrorists, we are letting in murderers and rapists, and other countries are emptying their prisons and sending their worst people to us and overwhelming our city governments, overwhelming public schools. As I said in my 2019 book, there's over 400 languages spoken in public school today. How do you ever manage that and still allow children to learn what they need to learn? You can't. And these are all by design, because the ultimate goal is to collapse our society as it is so they can take over. And serves the border, I use that quote because that's what Joe Biden said they were going to do as soon as he took office.
Isn't that amazing? He took the quiet part out loud, and he wasn't even ashamed of it. Wow.
He said it
right out loud. Friends, there's so much that you need to understand if you are not familiar with the Cloward Pivot strategy. James has written a lot about that, but I also want to talk about the influence of communism and Marxism, and I just want to mention his previous book called Who Was Karl Marx? The Men, Motives, and Menace Behind Today's Rampaging American Left. You can get that at crisisnow.net. And James, just a couple of years ago, we talked to Dr. Robert Marbut. He's with this new documentary called Fentanyl Death Incorporated on the fentanyl crisis. That and the border crisis, they go hand in hand. And I hope and pray, I'm not hugely optimistic, but I hope and pray more Christians and more Americans will wake up and understand what's happening, discern what's happening in our own country, who our enemies are, and what the Trump administration is doing. They're not perfect, but what they're doing is trying to undo a lot of evil that has been entrenched for decades. Your final thoughts in 45 seconds, James.
Yeah, no, and they've got a big job ahead of them, and we have a very big job ahead of us.
Yes.
And I would say we start by praying for our country, and then we follow that by getting right to work in helping and supporting the president and everything he's doing as best as we can.
Amen, brother. Friends, go to worldviewmatters.tv. Look up our previous part one of this podcast. There it is, with James Simpson, when we started talking about manufactured crisis. And we'll, Lord willing, we'll talk to him again in the near future. Brother, thank you for all your work and for putting this out there. God bless you, sir.
Thanks so much, David. Great to be with you again.
You're most welcome. All right, guys, thank you so much for sharing the podcast. God bless you. And as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.